Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. George T. Stagg Bourbon, 140 proof. Poured over one ice cube, not two. Now, you can buy him a drink. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to The Jeff Blair Show, live from National Harbor, Maryland, the site of baseball's winter meetings. Jeff Blair alongside the lovely and talented Michael Wilner. So that's interesting little news we had before the break. By the way, Chris Colabello, I did not mention this, Chris Colabello has elected free agency. Probably no great surprise. He will be playing for Team Italia in the World Baseball Classic.
And you know, it's probably the best move is that they move on from each other, the Jays and Colabello. He was not in their plans at all. I think they're kind of hoping that Steve Pierce does for them what Colabello did for them in 2015 when he had a great year. There's really no great point in Colabello staying with this organization if he had the choice, and he did.
No, and I think there was a, I wouldn't call it a breach of trust, but I think a lot of people in the organization didn't appreciate the way Chris Colabello threw a lot of people under the bus.
Look, I mean, it's, when it's your own guy, you really want to believe.
Yep.
And as I said, with all the people, you know, all the callers in April about it and everything, if Chris Colabello came out, got dinged, told the story he told, and he played for any other team in the major leagues, would you have believed it for even a heartbeat? And the answer is obviously no.
No. 100%. We're going to be joined, by the way, by Ross Atkins tomorrow morning.
John Gibbons,
the manager of the Blue Jays, is not here.
His name's still up on the board.
Due to the flu.
To do an availability of 4:30.
I know. I exchanged texts with Mr. Gibbons last night, or yesterday.
Me too.
And he said he didn't feel well. I extended an invitation to come on with us. He said, is Wilner on with you? I said no, and he said, great, I'll do it. No, he may be joining us tomorrow or Thursday. But and of course, being the intrepid reporter that I am, I asked him if this was in any way related to a contractual issue with the Blue Jays.
A sick out? Trying to get an extension?
Well,
I don't think
he, you know, we
do
keep
that.
Being, I mean, you know, Ross Atkins kind of fanned the flames a little bit at the end of the season, saying that he would certainly be open to looking at extending John Gibbons. I think they still are, but clearly no decision has been made. That's an interesting look. Clearly no decision has been made yet. But it's all simple matter of John Gibbons having the flu. So we may get him via the magic of the telephone line at some point in the next couple of days. I do know that we will be joined by Hall of Fame reporter Peter Gammons at 11:35 today. Peter Gammons, who has made more money for people in this industry, for writers, than anybody else in the history of writing. First print guy to go into mass media, to go into TV in particular.
And many have followed,
and he'll be along. Peter's always good for a couple of rumors. It'll actually be interesting to get his take, because Peter's spent more time in the lobbies of winter meetings than just about anybody else, I would think. And it'll be interesting to get his take in the development, or I should say the developing player market.
Mike, can we talk about music with him?
We can talk about music with him. We can always talk about music.
That's Peter. Almost more exciting for me to talk about than talk about baseball with him.
Well, why don't you just take over the show then? You can talk about music. I'll go have a pee or something.
All right.
That'd be good.
Sure.
Just before the break, we talked about the report that Dexter Fowler, or I should say that the St. Louis Cardinals were now talking about Ian Desmond maybe moving off Dexter Fowler a bit. We know they were talking about Dexter Fowler last night.
And when I tweeted that about Fowler, Shai Davidi, the intrepid reporter, tweeted back. I said maybe this means that they're clearing the way for Fowler to sign with the Blue Jays. And Shai says maybe this means they're putting a little pressure on Fowler to make a decision.
To make a decision, right. Which, I mean, and that, look, that's part of the game as well.
Yeah.
A very public floating of a story. And, you know, can sometimes have The consequence being that the player you really want maybe feels a little bit more of an urgency to sign.
And that may have been behind the Monday night Mitch Moore or the Sunday night Mitch Moreland rumor.
Absolutely.
That might have put a little bit of pressure on Steve Pearce.
I think Shai's kind of suggested that. That's all fair game. And, you know, especially now, given the way this market is sort of developed slowly, and given the way social media is now, you know, there are so many ways you can use the media if you want to get a story out there or get a spin out there. And
can we talk about that for a second? Because
yeah.
You've been in the print game for so long. How do you think? Well, not. We know that this happens, but how do you think that agents use writers?
There's actually, it's funny. This is a conversation I had with Tom Rich, longtime player agent. I don't know how many years ago it was. This is before social media. There's basically layers of writers. You got your national guys, obviously, your Rosenthals, your Haymans, your Nightingales, kind of the mainstream national guys. You got your national bloggers.
Right.
You got guys that you know are read by people in the industry, and then you got local guys. And agents will do that. I mean, they will. You'll run into an agent in the lobby. And most of your time as a reporter here is spent wasting time. All you're literally doing is walking around and talking to as many people as you can. And agents, in the past especially, used, because they know that every day the reporters covering a certain team go and meet the general managers at around 5 o'clock. Every team that's here has a 5 o'clock media availability. Sometimes they're off the record. You know, the Expos used to do one where it was on the record and then off the record. Sometimes it's off the record. Most of the time it's on the record. But the idea of planting a suggestion with a reporter, knowing that that reporter, if he's not going to ask the GM directly, he's probably going to ask somebody close to the GM about that. It's information is currency here, right? Everybody likes to think they have something that somebody else doesn't have. And you can see a story literally gather steam at the winter meetings because somebody says something to somebody who talks to their GM, and now he's wondering, okay, geez, maybe we've got to move off in this. He talks to another guy. I think it's fair game, first of all, but it's also, I think, absolutely imperative if you're an agent now to know how to do it and to know the guys you can use to get a story out of it. Like, if you want anything known in baseball, Mike, and this is no disrespect to Ken Rosenthal, because, again, it's fair game. If you want anything known in baseball, you go to Ken Rosenthal.
Right.
And it's out there.
But a lot of times, well, maybe not a lot of times, but when I say the word use, sometimes there are agents who want to get a story out that's not true.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess a writer isn't going to know. I mean, like you said, information is currency, and if you have a story that nobody else has, you're going to want to put it out there. But
you know what happened? Social media has changed that game completely. You were a lot more careful as a writer when it was all about the deadline, right? You wrote a story, and it was in the paper there. The next day, it was there in perpetuity. You wrote a story with a bad rumor. People, you know, a month later could look at that story and go, look at this jackass wrote. Can you believe this? Twitter has changed it because you can throw any rumor out there on Twitter, and if it's wrong, 15 minutes later, say, oh, my bad. Wasn't the Cardinals interested in Dexter Fowler, was the Cubs.
Right, Dom Brown's not getting traded for Jose Bautista.
Bingo, exactly. And in some ways, that to me is the strength of Twitter for a reporter. The problem is that, and we talked about fake news, the problem is that a lot of times people take what they see on Twitter as being
the gospel truth.
And, you know, like I always laugh because people say on Twitter, hey, you know, can you tell us what's going on? And my response is always, if I have a scoop, I'm not going to reveal it on Twitter in 140 characters. You're going to have to go to the website to read it. But Twitter's changed the way reporters handle rumors tremendously. I mean, the idea of throwing crap against the wall and seeing if it sticks, which everybody used to talk about with reporters, that's way more the case now than it was when I started. Way more the case, because you can pull it back right away. Hell, you know what? You can delete a tweet.
Yep.
You can never delete a newspaper story once
true.
It's out there.
Yeah.
Once it's out there. It is Jeff Blair and Mike Wilner. We are at the winter meetings in National Harbor, Maryland. Peter Gammons is going to join us at 11:30. I do believe Travis McKenzie has been dispatched to find Cliff Floyd. How hard can that be?
I saw him wandering the halls, Travis. Yeah, Cliff Floyd is a tough guy to miss. It would be great if we could.
But he's a busy guy, too.
Yeah, everybody's busy here. And
Cliff is really busy. Cliff's got people to see.
Well, I mean, he's Cliff Floyd, right? He's an
Absolutely.
Important guy. Oh, there's Travis McKenzie.
He looks concerned.
He looks like he's looking for someone to come join us. The thing is, here where we are, we're in like the upper lobby beside all the TV sets outside the media workroom. So there are people going back and forth all the time. But a lot of them are going with somewhere to go.
Deeply engrossed in conversation.
Yeah, and you know, you can't walk 5 feet if you know anybody without being stopped and moved into another conversation. So I'm keeping my eye out for people to try to fish over here to our little set.
I want to talk a little bit about the Jays' bullpen, Mike, because we talked to Ned Colletti about how the dynamics of putting a bullpen together has changed. You know the minor league system pretty well. Is there anybody you see in the Jays minor league system that you can see being a factor,
yeah,
playing a role in the bullpen this year?
Absolutely. And I talked to Ross Atkins about that yesterday when we were in that 5 o'clock availability that you said every team has. There is a group with Ryan Tepera, Bo Schultz, Danny Barnes, Chris Smith, and then the lefties, Matt Dermody and Chad Jurado, but of Barnes, Schultz, Tepera, and Smith, I really think, I mean, I've been on Bo Schultz for a couple of years now. I love the arm, and he really was one of only three reliable Blue Jay relievers last July before he hurt his hip and never really got a shot coming back off the hip surgery. But I love Bo Schultz's arm, mm-hmm. and I think he's quite good. Ryan Tepera has a terrific arm as well. He has, you know, taken some hard knocks through the development process in the major leagues. Most notably when in 2015, I think he gave up 8 homers in 30 innings or something like that.
There was walking in the run against that game against San Francisco, too.
Yeah.
The bases loaded.
Yeah, that's right. I think he's Chris Smith is a guy who got the call up in September, but never got into a game. And Danny Barnes had an unbelievable year in the minors last year. And I asked Atkins about that group, and I asked him if he saw someone that could possibly emerge from that group, and he said, "Well, your guess is as good as mine." And then he immediately backtracked and said, "Well, no, my guess is probably a lot better than yours."
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, I think a couple of them could be real contributors.
What about young guys, younger guys in the system? Is there...
like deep dives in the system?
Well, I don't even know about deep dives. You know, I mean, Brunt floated out the possibility of a guy like Connor Green maybe getting a... If you need a strike thrower.
Right, but I don't think this... I don't think this regime works like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Roberto Osuna and Miguel Castro made the team in 2015, out of spring training, as 20-year-olds, I think Shai Davidi's going to come join us. That's nice. And he can
You're not Cliff Floyd. You don't look like Cliff Floyd at all.
Well. He looks a little bit like Cliff Floyd.
Finish your conversation.
You were making a point about
Connor Green.
Yeah, we're talking about Jeff was asking me about younger players in the bullpen, maybe turning a starter into a reliever on the way up. And I think when you look at Castro and Osuna as 20-year-olds making the team in 2015, Alex Anthopoulos said, stuff plays, and you don't want to waste it getting A-ball hitters out. I don't think Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, I mean, they may share that opinion, but I don't think they're interested in moving young guys along quite that quickly.
Yeah, I would think we're going to see, in general, a much more conservative approach to all their prospects. A slow players through the system, you know, season, something like a full season or close to it at each level, various checks that a player needs to achieve at each stop before he can get promotion.
Give us the latest on Dexter Fowler, if there is a latest.
I'm not sure beyond what's out there that there's much. I think that the Blue Jays are in it. There seems to be a gap between them and the Cardinals. Bob Nightingale just mentioned that the Cardinals have discussed Ian Desmond. Now, is that something that's floated out there to try and move Dexter Fowler a little bit? That certainly would be something that happens at the winter meetings.
So. We're talking about that as well. That might have happened with Mitch Moreland 2 days ago.
Yeah, that's certainly one theory that's out there. So I think Dexter Fowler is the next big piece that needs to fall for the Blue Jays. And depending what happens with him, sort of the way, once Edwin Encarnacion said no to their initial offer, they turned and got Morales and Pierce. Dexter Fowler may be the linchpin of the next plan of the, or the next phase of the Blue Jays offseason.
Would Ian Desmond be a plan B for them at all?
I haven't heard that. I think that they'd rather get more left-handed than right-handed. And, Desmond's a great competitor, great clubhouse guy. There's been some inconsistencies in his performance, which is probably why he didn't get the big contract last offseason, had to take the one-year deal from the Rangers. So I'm not so sure that he's on their radar right now.
I just don't think he gets on base enough, honestly.
No, I don't. He's certainly not your first choice.
We were discussing Adam Eaton a little earlier. If the White Sox do trade Chris Sale, and it looks like they're either got down the road or they're headed down the road for that, does that sort of open up maybe a, I don't want to say fire sale because they're not giving anybody away, but would that make them more inclined to make a move on a guy like that?
Well, certainly that seems to be their plan, right? But they need assets back. And, look at the Thornburg deal between the Red Sox and the Brewers. Like, players who come with some control and aren't too expensive, and Adam Eaton certainly fits that bill, although there's a higher price tag on him because he's further down the road.
Yeah, Thornburg's a 0-3 guy.
No, he's a first-year ARB, so he's going to start costing money. But Adam Eaton's not going to be cheap. And are the Blue Jays going to be willing to give up the prospect capital? And we haven't seen them be willing to do that at all. They have only been willing to move fringe guys. Unless someone wants to take someone who's out of the circle of guys that the Blue Jays believe in, and that's really all the names that you've heard of, because there is some depth there, but those guys don't have trade value yet because they're so far from the big leagues. I don't know that the Blue Jays are making that deal.
Atkins did tell us yesterday that he's been discussing deals where they would move some prospects, but none of them ever came to fruition, or at least haven't yet.
Right, and
But he seemed to say that he was willing to do it.
If you're another team and you're looking at the Jays farm system, who do you want? You want Rowdy Tellez. You want Richard Urania. Mm-hmm. You want Reed Foley, Green, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Those are the guys you want. So are the Blue Jays going to part with that and take away from their big picture plan and the next phase of guys who are going to make up the core once the current core starts aging? I don't think this regime wants to do that. I think they want to protect that prospect capital so they don't have this gap anymore.
Especially with position players. Especially with position players, I would see this team reluctant to move. Because they're getting into almost a crisis point with position players. They're getting old. I mean,
very old.
Getting very old.
Devin Travis aside, and there are injury questions with him, they don't have a young player young position player with upside on the roster that is getting better. I mean, the pitching side they do.
Yes.
With Osuna, Sanchez, Stroman, they have it there, but they don't have that on the position player side. So, I mean, that's certainly a concern. And really, since Kevin Pillar, who's the last homegrown player who's been on the position player that's been on this roster for a while? I mean, it's been a gap.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me so much. I think that you can fill gaps with smart trading and moves, and I know it's the Yankees are a special case, obviously, because they blow away everybody in payroll, but they went 14 years with no homegrown position players coming up. So and made the playoffs.
Well, but
every
they
year.
Had
they're the outlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the empire, and they had a core of position players that were there that were pretty good. I mean, they always
yes,
had.
Yes, they did.
But
yes,
I mean, I know did. What you're getting.
But
it's
the Blue
not
Jays
like they
core
had an
position
line.
Players pretty good too.
It's not like they had an assembly line.
But the Yankees were using their prospects a lot of times right. in trade, right? And so, and they've pushed the reset button.
Yes.
I think the model right now for a lot of teams are what the Red Sox have been doing. I think the Red Sox are certainly the model for the Yankees right now. Yeah. And you
I
see
think the Cubs are a big model too.
The Cubs, that's the other version, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Red Sox are the sort of reboot on the fly without bottoming out, but get the young position players, young players in general, build that core around and fill in. You know, the Astros are the Cubs are in like with the Astros, and the Phillies, the Brewers are in tank camp, and you know, blow it up, go all the way to the bottom, get the high draft picks, and build up that way.
Shai Davidi, Mike Wilner, and Jeff Blair on the Jeff Blair Show. Joaquin Benoit gets $7.5 million from the Phillies. How the hell, if you're the Blue Jays, do you go about fishing in the free agent relief market when Joaquin Benoit is getting $7.5 million from the Phillies?
You don't.
I mean, seriously.
Reclamation projects and value plays is
like Nefty
Neftali Feliz.
Feliz and guys like that.
I think Feliz is going to get some money. I don't think he's going to be as cheap as, you know, as the Blue Jays would need him to be.
Eric Johnson is where you go fishing. Non-tendered by the Padres, who was a top prospect for the White Sox 3 years ago. That's a pool that you go fishing in, and you hope.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, Jonathan Mayo has thrown out some names in the Rule 5 draft. I mean, I think you're going to see this team be after in the Rule 5 draft. He's thrown out guys like Daniel Gibson, a left-handed pitcher, Jordan Guerrero, Jose Paulino. The Indians have a couple of Luis Lugo pitchers such as that, guys that you may...
Well, but remember last year in the Rule 5 draft, right, where all these names were out, and Joe Biagini was on no list for Rule 5 prospects, and that was a deep dive that the Blue Jays took. It worked out very well. And they've got, what, two spots open on the 40-man?
Yeah, they're two. They're 38 right now.
Two so, after Pierce.
Right. So they, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all for them to make two picks.
They could get Eric Jagiello.
Sure.
He needs to get to them. I mean, they're
the only reason I mention that is because I remember spring training one year. Actually, I don't see Jack Curry around here, but I remember one year Jack Curry was out. The Yankees were in town or were in Dunedin to play the Jays, and we're talking about Aaron Judge and all the Yankees prospects. And I just remember him talking about that the Yankees were so high on Eric Jagiello, third baseman, first baseman.
Yan-Hervis Solarte? I don't know. I mean, all these guys that we thought were going to be great Rule 5 picks, right?
Yeah.
And it's you need to have your scouting department get really deep and find out who all these guys are. There were, what, five or six Cleveland prospects last year who we thought the Jays would be all over.
Yeah.
Not so much.
No, it's that may be the thing. I should know by now to never be surprised at anything that happens in baseball. You know, even last year, okay, people were overpaying for lefty specialists. All right, I kind of got that. But yeah, I don't get a lot of stuff that's going on in the relief market right now. I just don't. And it's not like you're paying for guys who are all have lights-out stuff either.
I mean, Melanson has been great, but it's not lights out stuff.
No.
And you wonder about that over the duration of the contract. But look, it's supply and demand, and it's a copycat game. You've got teams that want to be able to lock down games. And if you're the San Francisco Giants and you went home because you can't lock down games, you know, Mark Melanson's the answer. And then you're looking, okay, so if Melanson's getting 62 or whatever it was, mm-hmm.
But and 34 over 2 with the opt out too.
Right. And where's the market going on Chapman and Jansen, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be that high,
Chapman might get the 6 years that he wants, you know. He might. And that's
insane.
That's insane.
Right.
By the way, your old friend Bob Nightingale, again, we're talking about deep dives into the relief market. Bob Nightingale just tweeted Joe Nathan is informing teams that he wants to pitch again.
And you reported our very good friend Brandon Morrow.
Brandon Morrow is out there looking for a deal, and he had a nice finish to the season, 18 games of relief for the Padres, 1.69 ERA, and he's made the transition, the definitive transition to the bullpen right now. He's looking for a bullpen job.
I'll tell you what, I would love to take a shot at him just because I remember that.
Yeah, that stuff was unbelievable.
Right, and the entire time he was struggling through injuries in the Blue Jays rotation, that was the constant conversation. Should he be a reliever? Well, now he's at the point where physically believes that being a reliever is the way for him to stay healthy. And look, if you're going to be looking for value and trying a reclamation project, he might be one of the guys.
Yep. You know, I want to ask you this. I noticed something yesterday when we were in the Jay suite during the media availability. You know, you saw they had that table there with all the laptops, and they had the whiteboard set up, and you could tell that it had been a very active room. I haven't been at all of the past four winter meetings. You know this organization really well, Shai. In terms of thought process, preparation, how they go about running their winter meetings, are they different than they were under Alex Anthopoulos? Because Alex wasn't a big fan of having all his guys down here at the winter meetings. I get the sense that these guys are doing a lot of work here.
Yeah, for sure. I think they're bigger. There are more people in the room now than there were under Alex Anthopoulos. But a lot of the work is similar in terms of what do you got on this guy? Where is this guy going? If this guy goes to this team, what does that mean for this player? What are the potential targets? Who do we like in what order of preference? Things like that. That stuff is very relatively similar. Really, the big difference is in how are you weighting your analysis of players? Mm-hmm. You know, are you trusting subjective versus objective a bit more or less? And what's that balance? That's really where the primary difference between teams lie.
Is this a less subjective group?
I believe there's probably more of a qualitative element to their analysis than there was before. Not because Alex's group didn't value that, but they have more resources on the analytics side now than they did under Alex, and I think there's the way that they put together some of that information has probably evolved too, because each team has their own proprietary systems. Mm-hmm. So I think what you have now is probably a hybrid of some of the things they were doing in Cleveland with some of the things they were doing in Toronto.
It's interesting because, you know, we had this discussion. We opened up the phones in the 9 o'clock hour and we had the
calls,
whole,
and if, then we said to hell with this.
If Alex was here discussion, right? So I think that when you go out the way he did off that great run, you know, and we all love Alex, the story will always be, well, he would have done this and he would have done this, and if he was here everything would be better, but they've made some good changes as well, you know, and I said this before I would love to see what Shapiro and Alex would have been able to do together, but that wasn't going to happen. But it's different isn't necessarily worse.
No, but people got used to one thing, and whenever you're doing something different, people can often be afraid of what's new, right? And look, Edwin Encarnacion is comfortable. Jose Bautista is comfortable, and understandably so, for great reason. They were great players, and I can't blame anybody for being upset this morning. They should be upset. You know, these are two iconic guys, but there are different ways to skin the cat, and the judgment has to be, did they make the right moves? If the Blue Jays still win, will people be upset that they won in a different way, or would they still want Encarnacion? I think at the end of the day, if you win, everything is fine, and if you don't win, then you're in trouble.
And we totally saw that this year with David Price, right? The feeling about David Price this time last year was exactly the same. Not as iconic and not as much a piece of this franchise, but everyone was upset. And they still won, and now no one, well,
sure.
In October, no one was upset.
And it, the principle is the same, but it's different when it's someone who's got the type of connection with the fan base that Bautista and Encarnacion do. I mean, they're iconic guys, they're franchise greats, they're probably going to end up on the level of excellence at some point. You know, that's a different conversation.
Appreciate you doing this. Have some TV. Don't you have TV? You've got TV soon.
There's something constantly.
There's something constantly.
Content will be produced.
Absolutely. We love content.
That's Shai Davidi, what we're here for.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Shai Davidi, of course, will be on TV from hourly, I guess, from 1 to 9. Just kidding. Shai, Ben Nicholson-Smith, Mike Wilner, Jeff Blair, Hazelmead, Jamie Campbell, all down here. Travis McKenzie, too, my producer, all down here for the baseball winter meetings. When we come back, a man who probably, I would say if you're, this is going to be silly, if you're going to put together a Mount Rushmore of winter meetings, Peter Gammon's face would be on it. God, I can't believe I said that. But he could probably make that case. Peter Gammons joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand, absolutely free. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show, live from National Harbor in Maryland. I love the Breeders. That was a great song. Jeff Blair and Mike Wilner. The second day of baseball's winter meetings, 4 days. We will be here through Thursday. And again, the Toronto Blue Jays, since the signing of Steve Pearce yesterday, getting the winter meetings, I guess, off to an unofficial start for those of you who are Blue Jays fans, at least. So far today, their biggest accomplishment has been, well, kind of being on the sidelines, kind of fallout from the Dexter Fowler, whatever's going on.
That's the biggest accomplishment today.
I made this point before the break, and I meant it seriously, and I think our next guest will understand why I said this. I said, if I had to put together my own personal Mount Rushmore winter meetings, Peter Gammon's face would be on it, because the first winter meetings I covered, the first person I saw when I walked in the lobby was Peter. You were already working, and I think it was like I got there Saturday because, wow, I wanted to beat everybody. Subsequent to that, it'd be my second winter meetings, the Expos signed Oil Can Boyd. And I, as a young reporter, went up and asked Peter, Oil Can Boyd, Red Sox. An hour later, I came away knowing everything I needed to know about Oil Can Boyd. Used your name as an intro when I went down to do a story on Oil Can Boyd. So it's a great pleasure for me and Mike Wilner to be joined by Peter Gammons. Peter,
thanks so much for
doing it.
I'll give you a little trivia about Oil Can Boyd.
Okay.
Chris Bryant's father, Mike Bryant, who played a little bit in the Red Sox farm system, his roommate was Oil Can Boyd, and they were very close friends.
Really?
So it kind of amazes me that Chris Bryant is who he is. I mean, extremely smart, tremendous guy. But Chris would never understand who Oil Can really was. So.
No, I don't think
I still see him, too. He shows up in Boston at Fenway Park. And
Peter, I wanted to ask you that. Mike and I talked a little bit in the last hour about just how the winter meetings have changed, and we're talking about Twitter and its impact, and social media and its impact. What were your rules for covering the winter meeting back in the day? Because you really did do it better than anybody else. We've got there are a lot of guys now, a lot of sources. Again, Twitter. There's a lot of stuff broken early. But I'm not just saying this because you're here, and I know you don't need to hear this, but you were the guy who broke a lot of stories that we all followed.
Well,
what was your rules for covering?
The biggest difference is that people left their suites then.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, the clubs all just hole up in their suites and get room service for 6 days. And it's very difficult to see anybody. I mean, I do have a... It bothers me that a lot of times I have to text somebody from the lobby to his room upstairs to try to get some background on what has been done. I mean, it's so different. I just tried to hang out, and there were always certain people that teams would for many years would send scouts or lower management people out to go in the lobby to find out what was going on. Sometimes they'd come to us, mm-hmm, to find out what's going on, or there were certain people. Jim Fregosi was always in the same seat in every hotel we ever went to. He knew everything that was going on. So just make sure you're, Jim, would you like me to get you a beer?
And the answer was always yes.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And But it was sort of wandering around, seeing everybody. I enjoy seeing the people. And that's what I find a little bit more difficult. I miss seeing people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are... I see Mark Shapiro every day because he's in the gym at like 5:30 the way I am. But otherwise, I mean, it's hard to find people. And I almost think that the winter meetings are obsolete now.
Mm-hmm.
They could do it by phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Alex Anthopoulos has made the point quite often. And, you know, again, a younger guy, he said, quite frankly, I could do the winter meetings just from just by text. You know, he said, I could get away with it just by text. I don't even have to be there. And, of course, it was the Yankees for the longest time. A couple of years, George Steinbrenner forbid his GMs from coming down to the winter meetings, didn't he?
Yes. And I never remember quite why George was upset. But I think that's almost the best way. And the GM meetings now, there's so much media there and so many agents. It's not – and I have sympathy for anybody looking for a job. So, I mean, these young people who are the job seekers, but a general manager can't go through the lobby because he's got to get besieged.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for people who are workaholics, and Alex is one of the all-time workaholics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love him, but it's hard for somebody like that because you end up, rather than being able to deal with people face-to-face, you end up, I remember him saying to me last year that he thought that, like, whatever the percentage was of business was done texting, not with teams going into rooms. I mean, part of covering it used to be, remember, I used to love the Lowe's Anatole in Dallas because all the elevators were glass, so you could stand in the lobby and see who was going up in elevators with who else. So whether it's an agent and or two general managers and their groups going up together to a room, so you get some idea of who is talking to whom. Now there's none of that. You don't really see people disappearing together. And I think the Anatole was three times I did that.
Joined by Peter Gammons in the MLB of the MLB Network. Yeah, I always...
The elevators are glass here, too.
But
in this day and age,
I've always figured the worst thing to happen to the winter meetings was it was either social media or the Opryland. I can't remember. One of the two worst things. You know, it's funny. I remember when I first started covering it, one of the things you would do, because teams would... They'd put together teams of people to go and visit individual teams, and if you had a guy... a scout in your organization who played with the GM of the Phillies, boom, he'd be part of your team that would go into the Phillies suite. And I can remember drawing up a list covering the Montreal Expos, and Dan Duquette was very good at this. He'd have guys, and I used to laugh because I'd look, okay, I see why this guy is going into this. Guy's not going with this group because this GM fired him 2 years ago, but he's going in with this group. There really was that whole, the intrigue aspect of it, of who's meeting with who, and then, of course, the agents would come through, and that was when all hell broke loose. If you saw an agent going up an elevator at 2 in the morning, that was the worst sign. That was the worst sign if you were a reporter. When you look at this market, Peter, the player market right now, some of the free agents that are out there, the amount of money and the term that relievers are getting, what's the biggest change you've noticed, even in the past couple of years, in the way the game is?
Well, for one thing, pitching is getting more and more expensive, and part of it is the development, and I think the whole United States program of these showcases where all they do is go out and throw two innings and throw as hard as they can. I found this interesting. About a week ago, a general manager said, boy, it just seems like there aren't the pitching prospects right now. So I went to MLB.com, took their top 30 prospects, only six of them were pitchers, going back 5 years. Took their top 30, and 15 of them were pitchers. And it's kind of, it's harder to develop pitching because the showcase, they don't learn any other pitches. It's all about velocity. They hurt their arms, all the Tommy John surgeries at 15 and 18. And so it's just the price keeps going up on them. And now with the whole relief pitcher craze, which I buy into to some extent, although I don't buy in to the sabermetric idea that starters don't have to pitch innings. I still think that's a fallacy. But I get it. But at the same time, the way the price has gone up, I mean, when Brett Cecil got that contract, I mean, Brett Cecil's good. I don't question that. I was just stunned that he got what a fourth starter would have gotten eight years ago.
And it used to be, I always used to think it's, you know, you could have a starter or you could have three relievers and to put together your team that way for the same money. But it's certainly moved away from that. Relievers are getting, I mean, Mark Zepchinski got 2 years and $11 million. A guy who, a former Blue Jay, who's been bad as often as he's been good in his major league career. I wanted to ask you, Peter, while we've got you, first of all, I have to tell you also that Jeff Blair had that story about his first meetings. I don't think it was my first meeting because I think I was too nervous to go up to you my first three winter meetings. No, but I like Tom Cheek and you were the people that I've been the most scared to talk to. And when I finally did introduce myself to you, you could not have been more pleasant and wonderful and helpful. So thank you so much for that. I want to ask you about something that a lot of Blue Jays fans are talking about right now and that we talked about earlier. And it's how you deal with franchise icons at the end. Because Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, almost 1,000% are not going to be back with the Blue Jays, but they're both all-timers and you know, huge parts of these two playoff runs, level of excellence players for the Blue Jays. You don't want to be sentimental, right? As a management team, you can't sign people with your heart. But is there a good way to have your best ever, some of your best ever players move on?
No, I think it's very hard. I mean, there's, if guys are really declining, John Hart used to say, never let a falling star land on you. But in my mind, they're not. Encarnacion is still one of the best hitters in baseball.
Sure.
And he's such a good hitter. He's not a big strikeout guy. He's just a really good hitter. And, I mean, you know, I know people who run teams are given budgets by ownership, and okay, this is what you could spend. But I do think it's a little, I think it's difficult. I also have the belief that, and the Blue Jays have been in a really good run. They haven't gotten to the World Series in this run yet, but it's still been tremendous for the playoffs the year before, and the team is so really fun to watch and so forth. It's, people always say to me, fans forget in a hurry. I'm not sure they do when guys are the best that played there. I mean, when David Ortiz started to decline, it looked like he might be done. And he almost got released at one point about 6 years ago. There was still that, well, but look at the home runs he hit when they won two World Series. And he's still beloved in the city. And you got to hold on. You got to make it. He's got to prove to you that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned out, you know, it became a glorious story for them, and he becomes, well, he's actually the most impactful person in the history of the franchise, partially because they hadn't won one in
right.
the World Series in 86 years, but still. And then I think you have to really be conscious of that. I mean, I wonder if Blue Jays fans, if the team is not going really well in April or May, get less enthusiastic about going to the ballpark because Encarnacion isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to really like Bautista. I find him fascinating because I think he's so smart. And I raised the question, okay, Ortiz is gone. I think Bautista would go to Boston and go off in a huge way. And I think he could handle Boston because I think he kind of liked that, the tension that there mm-hmm. always is around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, luxury tax, can't deal with it. And I don't know. I also think players like that, even if they're controversial, they're colorful. People want to watch them play. They want to hear what they say. They want to read about them. Does baseball lose when they lose really good players?
Right.
And they're leaving the city where they became really famous. And I'm sad to see it because I know what it was like in when they won in 92, 93, and, mm-hmm. and it was just so incredible to be there. It's been so incredible to be there the last couple of years. I worry a little bit about, not that it's going to become, you know, the Oakland A's, but is it going to be a little bit more difficult to get the fans to come out
right.
if you're winning 85 or 87 games?
Well, and that's my concern, because you are selling, you know, you're selling dreams and aspirations as well, and you need people to do that. Peter, listen, it's been great of you to join us. Thanks so much. A real pleasure. Always enjoy our time together. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Peter Gammons, the great Peter Gammons, joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. That is it for us from National Harbor, Maryland. We will be back tomorrow. Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro, Dan Duquette all joining us. Have a great day, everybody.